From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, a discussion of recent developments in the presidential campaign in the United States with political analyst Professor Tony Montero. We spoke with him via Skype from Philadelphia on Thursday. I'm watching the most recent developments, and thank you for joining us, by the way, Professor Montero. Yeah. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Now, watching both the actual vice presidential debate, the fact that so much of the discussion after the fact, social media, even actual commercial media, had to do with the stupid fly that landed on Pence, rather than policy. You know, we're supposed to be discussing that somewhere in there. And then the exchange that suddenly there are concerns over Trump being COVID positive, and so they want to have a virtuous group that the New York Times only a week ago, or less than a week ago, asked the group that sponsors the debates to please cancel the debates so that they could be canceled without Biden having to ask for it and looking bad. They basically said, well, no in-person debates. We want to do it virtually without consulting with Trump. Trump said, I'm not doing virtual debates. What's the point of this? And so I'm looking, wondering that all of this, everything has been changed. There were more arrests in New Jersey on Thursday. Postal workers who had ditched ballots. And wondering if we're looking at an election or a coup.
Yes. Well, you know, one thing, since you brought up the vice presidential debate, and really the one between Trump and Biden, I think we have to say this. With all of the advantages that the Biden and Harris ticket have, I mean, the whole mass media, most of the dominant political forces, even those in the Trump government, are with Biden. With all of those advantages, it is still uncertain whether or not he will win. And I think it is very uncertain. The other thing is, looking at the debate last night with Kamala Harris, who was supposed to make the case that Trump is not qualified to be president, she came off very weak. So she's supposed to be the strong, energetic one. She came off weak. Obviously, Biden is very, very weak. So I am of the opinion that it is not just you and I that see this very, very weak ticket, which raises the question, are these polls even legitimate?
Yeah.
Or are they rigged to create an environment and an impression that Biden is unbeatable? But they keep saying, you still have to come out to vote, come out and vote. And that's going to be a problem because they don't have a ground game to get people out to vote.
That is a problem.
In key states.
Yeah.
So then to your question, is this a coup d'etat or better yet, a regime change, color revolution recently like the failed one that we saw in Hong Kong or the one that's going on now in Belarus or Kyrgyzstan, which again was a former part of the Soviet Union, or what we saw in the Ukraine in 2013-2014. I think at this point we're looking at a coup d'etat, one that's been going on now for 3.5 years, a moving coup d'etat, and in spite of everything that they're doing, it is not a guarantee that Biden is going to win. So they have to find ways to get Trump out of there. And you're right about all of these mail-in ballots that are being sent to everybody all over the place. Even if you don't want one, you get it. That is going to be their you know, forgive the pun, their Trump card.
Yeah, I can see the poll workers saying, how come the line for O is so long? There's all these people there. Hi, my name is Occupant. Who's this guy Occupant? He voted 200,000 times.
Yeah. Well,
if you're looking at the polls, you know, you're talking about allegedly a scientific study of opinion, and you have to start with, what is this study designed to study? What are we trying to learn? What data are we trying to extract from the people that are being interviewed? Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing to try to make a determination about what are the issues, what policy issues are there that, you know, matter to you, and how do you associate those things with a particular candidate or a particular candidate's platform, and how are you going to be motivated to vote? But that isn't what happens at all anymore.
No. And, you know, for instance, when the New York Times conducts a poll, you already know what their political leanings are. And I think it would be extremely naive to think that the political beliefs, the political values, the politics of the New York Times does not shape the way they poll the nation or swing states or whatever. I think the polling system is now completely corrupted by the need and the imperative to get rid of Trump by any means necessary. And I would warn people, liberals, leftists, socialists, or whoever, that if you are prepared to go along with this and the role of Facebook and shutting down certain sites, and I'm not talking about QAnon, I'm talking about legitimate research sites like Global Research, or making it difficult to find articles from such sites. If the left, as it is known, is prepared to accept that in this election, well, how far will they allow things to go in the shutting down of speech? And I'm very concerned that there's been no outcry after the Green Party has been driven off the ballot here in the state of Pennsylvania. No outcry whatsoever from the Working Families Party or the liberal or social democratic wing of the Democratic Party at all. So at this point, and maybe this is not news to a lot of people, the liberals are prepared to do whatever it takes to elect Biden, even if that means undermining the election itself, and thus doing what they blamed on the Russians, tampering with our democracy. I don't feel at all confident that we will not see one of the most corrupt elections in history in 2020 in November, in a couple few weeks coming up.
Yeah, and I would say maybe in world history, not just American history.
That's right, and I'm agreeing with you. It's stuff that they usually associate with, quote, third world countries,
right.
And where they send in monitors from all of the so-called democracies to oversee elections. Well, who's going to oversee this election?
Yeah. Well, and the reality of it, of course, is in those so-called third world countries, the corruption comes from the fact that you have economies and societies that have been whose growth has been constrained by colonialism and imperialism, and this massive economic force intervening in the local politics, that being the corrupting force. In other words, it's the U.S. that corrupts the politics of Latin America, Africa, and Asia, for example. And so how exactly is it that those same forces are going to be able to do that here? Well, I mean, you know, we've noticed and discovered and discussed over a period of the last 100 years or so that there are internal colonies in the United States. And I would say if you were to really study it just on the economic basis alone, and also incarceration rates and everything else, that you would see that that's been an ongoing process of colonizing basically the entire population of the country.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And you know, with these levels of poverty and uncertainty and unemployment, there is a deep anger among all parts of the working class. And that anger could express itself in any number of ways. The first thing is they vote against the outsider. Okay, the elite are attacking Trump. I'm going to vote for Trump as a protest against the elite. The other thing is that we may see a larger number of the electorate not voting in 2020 as a protest against the elites and their attempt to either buy or steal this election.
Yeah, I think that's quite possible. Definitely. You know, I'll go back to the polling for a minute and the role that it plays. You know, what it has been measured, the kinds of things that they measure. As you remember, we were discussing this 4 years ago. The polls were showing that Clinton was ahead of Trump by, 9 million points. And, that there was a 1 in 200 gazillion chance that it was more of a chance of someone from Alpha Centauri winning the Electoral College than Donald Trump. And they had a disclaimer from Alpha Centauri saying, if we win, we won't take office. We looked at the question. We looked hard at the studies that were underlying these different polls or the stories about the polls, and we found out that in a year where both Sanders and Trump had been lifted up out of oblivion, in the primaries because of their position on trade and job creation, that the polling didn't mention jobs, employment, or different keywords that had to do with exactly the phenomenon that was at the heart of the things that people couldn't understand in the 2016 election. And so if the polls were not seeing that, and then there's this unexpected quote-unquote outcome, if the purpose of polling is what we're told it is, which is just to measure and report on what's going on rather than to use it to manipulate the outcome, well, then you would think that would be corrected. But the same phenomenon is happening now. They will measure... there'll be a shock story about Trump. We found out that, Trump, when he was in kindergarten, sat in front of this guy, and that guy wrote a book about how Trump used to pass wind during kindergarten class. Okay? That's the story of the day today. And so there'll be a poll that will measure how do you feel about people that sit in front of you in kindergarten and pass wind. And that will be the basis... Would you vote for someone that did that, of their polling? In other words, things that have nothing to do with public policy or with the needs of people that are going in to vote and try to get some of their needs satisfied, expressed through that process, they're not gauging that at all. They're dealing with emotional issues and particularly issues that they get dropped into the media. And then they get tested to see what the reaction was.
That's right.
And to me, that looks like manipulation because it's the same companies that are doing both.
Yeah, that are doing both. And you know,
That's why, you know, with weak candidates like Biden and Harris, and then Trump is this huge personality, they want to make it a referendum on Trump, not on his policy.
For sure. For 4 years, that's been the case.
Yeah, that's been the case. But then, of course, Trump being such a big personality, a very unique figure in national politics.
Yep.
I don't know that there's ever been anyone quite like him.
Right.
So they can make it about him, because in a lot of ways he makes it about him. But the question becomes, is that enough? Especially if you don't have a ground game in Michigan or Wisconsin or most of Pennsylvania. So you have to stir up anger and dislike to such an extreme that you think people will come out and vote against it. He has to be a white supremacist. He has to be everything that's evil under the sun.
Right.
And thus, whatever is done to get him out of power is justified and legitimate.
Right.
Now the left, what is called the left, and I, you know, always put quotes around
this.
What is called the left has more or less capitulated to this. I don't know, and we've said this before, whether the left as defined and configured in this time, in this moment, can ever regain any authority or standing among the masses, especially the working class, if they ever had it.
Yeah, you were saying regain. I'm wondering, obtain might be more
appropriate. Yeah. When was the last time they had it? Maybe in the 30s.
Yeah.
But the question is, if you are now prepared to go uncritically with Biden, as you went uncritically with Hillary, I don't see a future for this kind of left. Now, there are other things going on, and I've mentioned this before, the Movement for People's Party, which I think is one of the more positive developments in this moment. That's the way I'm looking at it. I think, and back to your question, is this something more like a coup d'etat or a color revolution a la the Ukraine, a la Hong Kong, and other places? I have not ever been convinced that the Black Lives Matter movement, and quotes around that, is anything other than a type of a color revolution. It's not a civil rights movement by any stretch of the imagination. You don't know who's leading it, and we don't know where all the funding is coming from. I think there are a lot of questions that have to be asked. And for those people who think, oh, it's so simple, how could you not be for Biden? Well, there are 100 reasons why you could not be for Biden. There are reasons, plausible reasons, to say I'm not voting for either. But there are also people who are genuinely convinced that from a progressive point of view, that Trump would make a better president in his second term. Well, obviously, when he talks about pulling out of NATO and pardoning, I think that's what they're saying, pardoning Edward Snowden and maybe Julian Assange, I think you have to look at that seriously.
And the obverse of that is, if you look at the color revolutions you just mentioned and who's targeted.
Yes.
And then you look at the narrative that targets Trump. You've got an ongoing narrative, first of all. The situation that, you know, the strategy, if you want to call it that, the approach that was taken 4 years ago was, in essence, to demonize Trump and thereby drop his level of support below the threshold to win, thereby winning. I mean, that's what they did. And they were handicapped by the fact that the person that they hoped would benefit from this was polling by their own data as perhaps the most unpopular political figure in the country at the time they wanted to do this. And so rather than suppress, say, a normal person's favorables down to like 40% or something, where, you know, an average politician at 50% would be able to win, you had to knock him down into the basement because she was down in the basement already. Right. And he started out as a popular cultural figure with a good part of the population, not a majority, but a really strong minority. And so that, you know, it moved a little more sluggishly than it would under normal circumstances when they do a job on you. Mm-hmm. That failed. And so since then, they have had, you know, 4 years to test almost to a person, what particular thing do you find most disgusting and distasteful in a human being, and then find some example of that in Trump. Well, if someone's family hates them, they're really a bad person. So here's the book by the sister, and, you know, and this.
The niece.
Okay, you have, you know, I mean, some of the things, even now, for the first time in the history, this is Chuck Schumer, in January, I think it was January 2nd of 2017 or January 3rd. So Trump's not even in office yet. And he had said, look, you know, you can't buy everything that the CIA and the FBI tell you. Just look at their history. And Schumer said, you're a fool for taking these people on. They can do all kinds of stuff to you. Well, one of the things is like when you're closing in on the election in the middle of a pandemic, all of a sudden, for the first time in history, the editorial board of the New England Journal of Medicine decides they have to endorse a candidate for president.
Yeah.
And they decide that they're going to beat up on Trump over the way that the COVID's been handled by the U.S. government under his time. Now, you know, there have been dozens of things like that. We've had, you know, groups, letters from groups of psychiatrists and letters from groups of Cub Scouts and whatever else. You know, the soup of the day has been every day for 4 years. It gets big play in the media for 2 or 3 days. It gets spread out. And Trump's numbers stay about the same. So that strategy for all, you know, they're still employing it, has had 4 years of the maximum, you know, output of the propaganda machine, and still nothing. And what I think what it really does is it highlights this particular point, which is all they had to do was have someone else come out and cover some of the policy points that Trump has offered people to peel some of the support away, and they haven't done that. Biden has even less favorables in terms of policy than Clinton did. And Harris, of course, has the baggage of her career as a prosecutor and her enthusiastic, almost bragging about putting people in prison for marijuana.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just shows how inflexible the system is and how arrogant it is. And it looks like it's going to replicate the same thing that happened 4 years ago.
Well, the other thing is the inherent weaknesses of a coalition from above.
Yeah.
You know, so you get all the elites uniting and, you know, the New England Journal of Medicine and the 25 people who read it.
Right.
Or, you know, even the Archdiocese of New York.
Right.
Will break its, you know, a 2,000-year history of not endorsing candidates
that
come out, you know. But it's a coalition from above with no ground game. And that's what throws everything into uncertainty. When I say uncertainty, that is the coalition from above knows less about the people on the ground, the masses of voters, than maybe Trump's people do, because they have a ground game. They have been out there since 2016. That's why I'm saying the polls, and this is my, can't be right, because the coalition under which all of this is taking place is not in touch with the ordinary person. Mm. Now, they say, you know, they keep talking about the polls showing this, and the polls, well, you know, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, they were talking about Hispanics in Florida shifting the balance towards Trump in Florida.
Right.
But now this week or yesterday, the polls come out. Biden is ahead by 7-8 points
right.
in Florida. Well, what happened to the Hispanics?
Right. Oh, they're so fickle. They're just so fickle.
Or now they have seen a groundswell, not just of suburban moms, but of senior citizens in nursing homes.
Yeah.
And they're fired up and not going to take it anymore. I mean, right. Come on.
I know. Well, you know, see, it's difficult. I would say it's not completely revealing to say that the polls are wrong or right, because we're not talking about the polls most of the time. We're talking about the newspaper reports interpreting the executive summaries of the report on a poll, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we're talking about, here's a scientific study. Okay, here's the data sets as presented, as, you know, here's the questionnaire, here's the responses, mm-hmm. here's, you know, you collate all of it. Okay, here's how, what we weighted, here's how we interpret it. Here's the report we write. Here's the press release we send out with cites from the executive summary, and here's the story that I wrote that is make this look like Biden wins. Whatever that is. Well, you know, the poll probably is right in terms of providing the answer to the questions asked, but that's not the same as looking at the headline and saying that that headline and that story are true. The questions asked may be, do you think Trump is terrible because he was in a parking lot and said he grabs people by this, or he did, his sister hates his guts, or he wrote this letter to the newspaper, you know, the full page ad to the newspaper, whatever it was. Do you think he's terrible because of that? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, if it ends there, and would you vote for somebody that did that? And even if they say no, if you don't make a further inquiry, how do you feel about the guy that got you a job, for example? If you're talking to people in Ohio that just got their jobs back, they might say, I feel great about him, and no matter what else he did, even the devil, I'd vote for him. And if you don't ask that question, then the other question is meaningless in terms of the conversation that's being had by the, you know, that the reporter is laying the story into. And so,
Yeah. And the other thing they can't measure is enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a big factor in who comes out to vote.
That's right. That is the determining factor. I'm on my couch. Am I getting up to go pull a lever for that clown or not? And we're out of time. I'd like to thank you for your time again. And we will pick this up and keep kicking it around for the next couple of weeks until it's all over. And I'm sure we'll have a lot more to talk about.
All right. Thank you, Don.
Thank you, too. Professor Montero, thank you very much.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.